I'll call this meeting of the Retirement Committee to order. We will start with a roll call.
Roll call, Director Mesqua.
Present.
Director Bilodeau.
Present.
Director Yeo. Director Whitaker.
Here.
Director Meeks. Director Nguyen. Director Tran. Director Sheldon. Director Green. Jason Dadakis.
Here.
Kevin O'Toole.
Here.
We do have a quorum of your committee.
Great. Now's the time for visitor participation. If anybody would like to address us on any items not on the agenda, just our jurisdiction. Being none. Oh, that's not Kennedy. He doesn't have his hand up. That's just the cursor, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Seeing none, are there any items received too late to the agenda?
There are none.
Great. That brings us to the consent calendar. It consists of the minutes of the previous meeting. What is the pleasure of the committee?
I would move approval.
I'll second.
Great. That's the motion a second. If you will call the roll, please.
Roll call, Director Mesqua.
Yes.
Director Bilodeau.
Yes.
Jason Dadakis.
Yes.
Kevin O'Toole.
Yes.
Director Whitaker.
Aye.
That motion carries 5-0.
Great. That brings us to the one discussion item, which is the 457B Deferred Compensation Plans Investment Line of Review and 401A Red Flag Fund Review.
All right. I'm going to turn that over to Sutherland.
Thank you very much, everybody. Director, I think you should chair all these meetings. So I'm going to go through minutes from, do we need to change the screen?
It's on the up, but I can hear it. Just hit the PDF.
Red thing at
the
top. Okay. Are we sharing it? We sharing it through Zoom?
Do you have the actual presentation? Not just the.
Okay.
Do you want to close that on the share screen?
There, let's see it.
I'll close this one. Hold on.
Not close it, but minimize it, right?
Minimize it.
Sure. Give me the share screen.
Yep.
You need the whole packet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Share your screen and then toggle the. I think.
There we go.
And now you got there.
All right.
There we go.
Excellent work, everybody. All right. Thanks for the time, everybody. So we have minutes from the last three meetings. April's meeting was a traditional meeting. Then we had a meeting in May to make all of the share class changes as part of the move to Fidelity. And then we had other meetings to make decisions about the guaranteed account and one fund that was blocked from being brought over because it was not available on Fidelity's platform. So I'll go through all of those in chronological order. So April 25th meeting, we had two red flags in the 457. There are still red flags today, the emerging markets, JP Morgan, and the Touchstone mid-cap growth, which is a mid-cap blend, actually, I should say blend, not growth. And then at the bottom there, we had a, actually, can we go back one page? So on the 401A, we had the Goldman Sachs inflation protected. So that's all government guaranteed bonds, but that was on the red flag list from August of last year. So that's still red flagged, and we're past 1 year in terms of its red flag status. So we started that meeting as we did today, reviewing the meeting minutes. We did a market and economic review. You can go to the next page, please. We did make no fund changes in that particular meeting.
Oops, there you go. One more.
Yeah, so no fund additions. So either plan. JP Morgan stayed red flag, Touchstone stayed red flag, and JP Morgan mid growth was added to the red flag list in the 401A. And on the next page, you'll see that joined the Goldman Sachs on the red flag list. So all funds otherwise meeting or beating their objectives. The 457 plan balance in March of this year was $32,200,000, average account balance of $120,000. Questions on those minutes for me? Then jumping on to May 25th, this was the efficient share class meeting. So we had to go through different ways of fee levelization. I won't revisit the entire subject, but the concept of making sure that all participants are being equalized fees in terms of the cost of the plan. So this committee decided to make a choice where we use the lowest cost version, which is a zero revenue share version, or the most fee efficient version, which after fidelity refunds any of that expense back to the participant, is the net lowest cost version. So something new for participants that they won't see until next year is any revenue sharing of funds they're using is going to be refunded to their account, and their actual fees from Fidelity and their fees from us will be transparent, and they'll see that billed to their account specifically. So we've modernized our plan, made it more transparent. We've also made it cheaper. Fidelity's fee is lower than what Empower's was. So there's a whole list here. I won't name every single fund, but in many cases, you're just going from one share class to another, a cheaper version of the same share class. The other change is we're with Fidelity Direct as far as their record-keeping platform. They actually, ironically, don't use Fidelity Advisor funds. They only use Fidelity Direct. So any Fidelity Advisor funds that we had through Empower are now Fidelity Direct. So the Fidelity Advisor Global Commodity Stock is now the Fidelity Global Commodity Stock, which seems like no big deal, but it is a different share class, different symbol. The cost is a little bit lower, but you have the same holdings, the same manager, the same strategy to the fund. So it is more cost effective to your participants. 457, same story as well. In a couple of cases, you actually went to a more fee efficient version that might have been a touch more expensive as far as the raw expense ratio goes, but after the refund was a lower cost version. So there are some funds that kind of don't make sense in terms of what's the zero revenue share version and what's the other. So it's incumbent on our team to remind you each quarter if one of those funds were to change the expense ratio, we might have future fund changes to make and be more efficient. We will bring those to the committee each quarter. I know that's a lot to handle if you weren't in these meetings in May, but any questions for me about that?
Questions? Please proceed.
Thank you. So in July, we had to have a quick meeting because Fidelity does not do business with TIA CREF. They were big competitors, so they did not offer the opportunity to continue using the TIA CREF Large Cap Growth Index Fund. But we were able to switch to the Fidelity Large Cap Growth Index Fund, which is actually slightly cheaper, slightly better performer, even though they have identical holdings. So that switch was made in that particular meeting. And that changeover was made when the money moved from Empower to Fidelity. They sold out of TIA CREF and bought Fidelity on the same day. Then everybody's favorite subject was August 22nd. How do we deal with the Prudential Guaranteed Income Fund? So much work, labor, and pain put in to get to a solution here. The hero was Stephanie Dozier, which got the over the goal line and came up with a solution that we can actually allow people to take money out of the Prudential Guaranteed Income Fund. We now offer people a higher yielding alternative, the Vanguard Federal Money Market Fund, which does yield over 5%. And any of your participants, as we've been very busy doing today and over the last few weeks, can move out of the Prudential Guaranteed Income Fund anytime they like, but of course, cannot move directly into the Vanguard Fund, must do so over a 90-day equity wash, or anybody who pulled out of the Prudential gift prior to the conversion to Fidelity can do so now, which we've been busy doing today. Questions for me about any of that? 12 months from now, I'd say 12 months from last month, November of 24, half of the remaining money in Prudential Guaranteed Income Fund will move into the Vanguard Fund. It'll be wired from Empower to Fidelity. The other half will move November of 25. So if people haven't gotten out on their own, which they're quickly doing, what's left over will move over on those two particular dates. Okay, market and economic review. So market overview, third quarter. So a positive year for stocks overall, not so in the third quarter, but a recovery year from 2022's losses. So last year was an unusual year, and that the S&P had an 18% loss, the bond market had a double-digit loss, a 13% loss. That had never happened before in the last 100 years. There's actually only been 5 years where stocks and bonds have had a loss at the same year, same calendar year, but the first time that the loss for both was double digits. So a recovery this year, but a recovery in just certain parts of the market so far. So if you notice the Dow, which was down for the quarter, the first benchmark, Dow Jones Industrial Average, only up 273 for the year. So the overall industrial economy not doing as well as the technology side of the economy. The NASDAQ, which was down 32% last year, is up 27% as the end of the third quarter, is up more than that after November's rally. The S&P, which is heavily weighted by a lot of those large technology companies, up 13% as of the end of the third quarter. And then you'll notice as we get to these different benchmarks, the Russell 1000, which represents the 1000 biggest stocks, if you separate it into the growth versus the value, you're going to notice a big difference in terms of performance. Russell 1000 value taking the year off at 179, growth at 25%. Mid-cap blend index up 391, but if you separate out the growth, you get a 10% gain and you get a break even essentially for the value. And then small stocks, which are hurt most by higher interest rates, they can't go to Wall Street and sell a bunch of bonds as many big firms did in 2000 and 2001. They still have to go to the banks and they're taking the pain of these higher interest rates for sure. So you can see the Russell 2000 value index down slightly for the year. The growth index only up 5% and the blend up 2.5%. Bonds, as of the end of September, were having its potential third losing year in a row, 2021, 22, and 23. But that's all been remedied on numbers you're not seeing here yet through November, where we had a furious rally in bonds as interest rates fell back down. So the aggregate bond index is a seven-year bond index. That's U.S. Treasuries and corporates. Down 121, I think it's plus four for the year now. Treasury bills are the good place to be after being, you can see over the 3, 5, and 10 year, a pretty poor place to be. They're very nice again. So the Fed artificially holding down interest rates at zero for more than a decade, kept T-bills earning very little. Now they're paying over 5%, but we have inverted yield curve, as many of you know, where your 6-month treasury is paying far more than your 30-year treasury. And if you look at the other bond categories, a bit of a mixed category. High yield, which are corporate bonds from lower credit quality issuers, are up 5%, but they tend to trade more with the economy. And then if you look at anything for the quarter, it was a difficult quarter because we started to see inflation percolate again during the summer. Oil prices pop up during the summer, so that brought bond prices down. Now all those numbers are back in the black. So let's look at S&P 500 categories. So page 15. Oh, back one. Yeah, so if you can just see off to the bottom right, the S&P 500 sector, there's 11 categories of the S&P. In purple, it tells you the year-to-date numbers. In orange, it tells you the third quarter numbers. So really, energy, the only category other than communication services with a tiny gain that made money in the third quarter. But energy stocks have become kind of that ultimate hedge. They were the ones that made money last year when everything else was losing money. This year, energy doing poorly for the year compared to technology, but tends to be when we worry about the rest of the markets, we run to energy stocks, or maybe energy stocks cause that downturn in the market. So communication services, you can see with a 40% plus gain, a little company named Alphabet's in there, and Meta, the old Facebook, is in there. Meta was down 70% last year and up 180% this year, so that's driving that benchmark. Consumer discretionary might as well just be the Amazon index. That's up 26%. Amazon stock struggled, got down to about 85 at one point. Now it's recovered to 140, so that nice gain there. And then it's information technology, Apple and Microsoft, as they look to take over the world, up 35% in terms of very nice gains. So they didn't get as hit as hard last year as some of the other tech names did, but they're certainly recovering this year. Then you notice utilities having a really rough year. Anybody guess why utilities are having a rough year? Interest rates. So people buy utilities for dividends. A 3% dividend when treasuries are paying zero is pretty nice, but a 3% dividend when treasuries are paying five, it's not nearly as attractive. So utilities tend to trade with the overall interest rate cycle. All right, questions for me on the markets? Someone's going to always ask me which way is it going to go. I would tell you up, down, or stay the same. All right, let's look at the 457 plan. So again, this being the voluntary savings plan, this did have the increase in the match to $125 per pay period. So we're looking here at the assets in terms of highest risk to lowest risk. So they're numbered on the left-hand side. The Morningstar style is listed next to that. The names are listed, the symbol, and he's done all this to put it together for us. In red, we remind you what the red flags are. So if you want to kind of get an idea what they have in there, how long they've been in the plan, what their expenses are, how many people are in there, you can see all those numbers. So the date they were added to the plan is listed there. The assets are listed there as of the end of November. What percentage of the total plan that represents? That's not a return number, but in terms of what percentage of the plan it represents. In bold, we tell you how many people are in the fund. It could be current or former employees of the district. And then the expense ratio of the fund versus our category average. The benchmark's on the right, and the fund is to the left of that. So now we're at a point where the only fund on here with an expense ratio higher than the benchmark is the water fund number five. There's only two water mutual funds in existence, and we have the best of the two. So that continues on to the next page where you can see balances, 35 million in this plan. You might notice the two investments right above it. The Prudential Guaranteed Income has 8.4 million, but another 760,000 has already found its way into the Vanguard money market. All of that has been added since November 16th. And any future contributions people had going to the Prudential Guaranteed Income Fund now go into Vanguard by default. So we will not be adding any new money to Prudential's fund at all. So what we call the style boxes, giving you an idea category-wise where the assets fall. So again, these numbers here are percentages of the total 35 million where it's found. So each box has a category total at the top and then one or two, sometimes three funds in that particular category telling you where the money is. You can see it's a pretty even distribution, but a touch more concentration on large growth, which has been the biggest winner. So kind of the S&P is 15% and large cap growth is 10% of these plan. Those are the two best performing categories of the year. And then we get down below the nine style boxes. You have your international. So our emerging markets fund is struggling. We use two different MFF funds, one growth and one more of a blend. Our gold fund, which we'll cover first today, then our real estate securities, which has been very good. Our water fund there is a needs following along. And then our asset manager funds, which used to be Fidelity Advisor asset manager funds, are now just Fidelity Asset Manager. So that percentage represents what amount of the fund is in stocks. And then a traditional balanced fund where Janus Henderson Balance has two-thirds of its money in stocks. And then two other specialty funds on the left-hand side, healthcare and technology. Let's change pages. Our safe harbor category here, those numbers we saw a second ago for Prudential and Vanguard. Be interesting to see what that numbers look like in our January meeting. And then in the traditional bond funds where some people have moved money to take advantage of higher interest rates, 3% is in the index and 1% is in the inflation protected. There's about 4% of the active managed JP Morgan total return. We do have a junk bond or high yield fund, which is about 0.6% of the overall plan from PGIM. That's Prudential Global Investment Manager. Okay, questions about the 457? We don't normally show the whole 401A asset diversification, but we thought we would today since everything moved over and there's some new share classes and everything. But this is the money purchase plan in terms of all its numbers. We do have the one red flag to review today, JP Morgan mid-cap growth, and then all of the assets there. And let's go on to page 33, where you can see there's already 1.1 million in the Vanguard money market, but still 47 million in the Prudential gift. So we've got about 55 million in there. 6 months ago, we had more than 78. We've kind of taken a lot of money out there despite the power fighting to not allow that to happen. Okay, and then that plan, of course, 166 million. First time ever of the two plans combined across 200 million. There were 40 when I started, so not a good progress. Wow. Okay, so looking at style boxes, so bigger holdings and large cap blend than a large cap growth. But you can see we have two active managers, Hartford and Parnassus, and then the passive Vanguard 500 index. And then most categories here, we offer people two different choices so they can kind of select which one fits them. But general trend among most plans is you have your index funds or your blend investments or your core investments. We do have the choice in large growth there with the Fidelity Fund, as I mentioned, is new. And you still have the active manager, T. Rowe Price, which does a really nice job in that category as an active. We use target date funds, which are your default investments in this plan. A target date fund is an age-based fund based on when the participant is expected to retire. So there's now a 2060 fund for young folks coming into the workforce. That's new to your plan. But anybody who joins the plan and doesn't set up an asset allocation goes into the one that matches their age closest to age 65. So 2010 would be for folks that already retired, 2020 recent retirees, and then 2030 folks that are shorter term. So those funds are going to be more bond and cash focused. The 2060 is going to be 90% stocks because those young folks are still in the growth mode or the accumulation phase. So we do have a real estate investment trust fund from Cohen and Steers over here, which has been the plan for very long. Do also have a gold fund and a commodity fund in this plan. And then a technology fund is the other specialty fund as well. On to the bonds on page 35. So 28% in the GIF and 2/3 of 1% is in Vanguard. And again, we'll see how those change. All right. Questions from me about all of that? Bunny's putting up the decision sheet where we'll all keep track of our decisions today. Those four funds in red are the one that we do need to spend most of our time on. So we'll focus on those. Stop me along the way if you guys have any questions. So we always put an example in here of Zephyr Style Advisor in terms of the formatting that we use. I think everybody in the room has seen this many times. Anybody want me to walk you through this? Are you guys comfortable with what these charts represent? Seeing nods. Okay. So we'll move forward. And the first item for review is going to be the Franklin Gold and Precious Metals. So not a red flag fund, but one we're just pointing out is slightly fallen below the benchmark of late. So let's start with that five-year chart in the middle. Still looks really good there. But if you look at the calendar years, it had a great 2019, a great 2020. They played defense well in 21, but then as gold stocks continue to lose money in 22 and year to date, they've had bigger losses than the benchmark there. That's why the three-year chart at the top of your page is slightly below benchmark. So 30 participants are holding this fund. 3% of the overall 457 is in here. Let's show you some more recent performance. We're going to switch slides here. And it looks like it's kind of the same chart, but the 12-month chart is there in the middle, which it is actually beating the benchmark on the 12-year, 12-month, and then the 6-month at the top is slightly under, although note that scale is pretty compressed. That scale goes from 5% to minus 20%. So that top chart is maybe about 2% below benchmark. The middle chart is maybe about 1% above benchmark. So question today, do we take any official action, which would be to put it on red flag, which gives it 12 months to show signs of improvement? Do we gray flag it, which means it's not a part of the minutes, but we're going to keep a special eye on it and look at it every quarter? Do we replace it with another fund? We don't normally as a committee make a harsh change like that without giving it some time. And you can notice that the 12-month numbers are better than benchmarks, so that should really give you confidence that it can kind of work its way back. It is a 3-star rated fund from Morningstar overall. 5 is best, 1 is worst. So first question to the committee is, do we gray flag it, which means we're just going to kind of put a marker next to it and look at it every quarter, or do we want to officially red flag it, which puts it on the clock for approval?
I have a comment.
What's that, Madam Mayor?
Can I make a comment?
Oh, yes.
Or I'd like to make a motion. I'd like to red flag it. I could make a motion for that. Or do I need one? Okay. So we can hear back every quarter.
Yeah. Jason, what do you think?
I think I'm okay with that.
Whether we red or gray flag it, we will look at it every quarter.
Okay, well then it's then it's irrelevant. You didn't say that, so I'm sorry, I missed that part.
No, my bad.
Okay, that's fine then. Not a problem.
Scott, just in terms of the alternatives, this fund sort of trending with the rest of the precious metals market right now, or is it?
Yeah, so this is sort of the gold stock universe right here. Okay. Not just the ones that we've screened, but this is it these days. So one of them we already own a lot of in the money purchase, which is Invesco Gold, the old Oppenheimer Gold and Special Minerals. And then there's the First Eagle Gold, which looks the best right now, but is the one that has more of gold itself rather than gold stocks. So when gold's doing poorly, it looks great. When gold's doing great, it looks poor. Go one more slide to show us that. If you would, indeed. So you can see there down there in the bottom left, when things are good, they give you about 80% of the upside. When things are bad, they give you about 80% of the downside. So you can predict those other charts. Was gold good or gold bad? I'll tell you where that particular fund was. So then you're really down to American Century Global Gold, which we owned at one time. Allspring, which is the old Wells Fargo funds, precious metals, or the current one that we have, or having the same gold fund in both plans, which I would recommend since there are folks concentrated in those funds in both plans. So to answer your question, Jason, we kind of have to look at recent performance. We have been the worst over the last year to date and the 2 year, but we still have some very good 3 year, 4 year, and 5 year numbers. So it hasn't really been trending with the other funds of late, but it has had a good track record longer term. So that would maybe argue for a more serious red fund.
Right. Scott, you don't think, I agree, I think we have to do at least gray and perhaps assist with the motion red, but this is, we red flag it, we have 12 months for it to prove it. If not, we're kind of looking at the alternatives.
That's what concerns me most about the red flag. Not red flagging it is where do we go?
Okay. That's the gold fund.
We're going to move it right flag.
Since we'll see it quarterly, I might make a substitute motion for a gray flag.
I'll spot it. Okay. The motion on the floor is to gray flag this one. We get formal votes on these?
We have.
We can either do it now or do it at the end.
Okay. Okay. Well, that we'll set that one on the table. We'll move on to the next one.
Everybody. Okay. So emerging markets. Another category that's kind of been left by the wayside by U.S. large growth stocks taking all the performance and probably all the talent when it comes to portfolio managers too. So JP Morgan looks very good on the five-year chart. You could almost just put the Franklin Gold on this particular chart and they look the same. So 2019 looks good, 2020 looks good, but it's been a bit of a struggle in the last 2.5 to 3 years or so. So you are down to only a 2-star rating for this fund, although their qualitative rating, which is their measure of their team, their process, their parent company, et cetera, is still a silver, gold being best, then silver, then bronze, then neutral, then negative. So, and then it does have a track record where the last 10 years, it's in the top 20%. The last 5 years, it's in the top 30%. But the 3 year is pretty rough, which is what we're looking at. Now, Anise already jumped here. Go ahead. We're going to jump there. Let's look at that. So on the next page, you're seeing that the November of 22 to October of 23, they're a little bit below benchmark, but they're more below benchmark on the last 6 months. So it's struggling, but kind of veering towards more struggling. So they still have a cushion on the five-year, which buys us time, but as more time rolls off that clock, go back one slide if you would, please. So you can see we're November of 2020, so we've lost all the good 2020 outperformance on the three-year, but we're going to start losing it on the five. You got to put up a big 24 to make up for losing 2019 and 2020 on your chart. Now, if we look at the alternatives, we have the best performer already in the other plan, which is the American Funds New World. So that's in orange to remind us we already own that. And then we've screened through other emerging market funds. Again, not a huge list, although a bigger list than the gold list. The highest rated by far is one we have, which is 5 stars in gold, which is the highest rating you can have. BlackRock's an option as an active manager, 4 stars in bronze. We could go index with Vanguard at 4 stars in bronze. We could go William Blair at 4 stars in neutral. When you hear William Blair, think high expenses. They generally tend to be expensive funds. Please note that Anise listed the expense ratio of that fund at 106. We're at 80 now, so we hate to see funds that we had are higher in cost if we don't have to. So red flag on this is more than a year, right? So we got up against the wall here as far as our investment policy statement goes, and it's not showing signs of improvement. So where do we go? Now, probably not tempting you too much with William Blair because you can see the three-year performance is down with us. BlackRock is underperforming with a touch more risk, so really it seems as if it's Vanguard or it's the other fund we have. Now, American Funds New World will have about 20% in developed markets, and emerging markets is supposed to be China, India, Brazil, Russia, Mexico, Turkey, et cetera. But American Funds New World's number one holding is Microsoft, an emerging company you probably have not heard of. So when emerging markets finally have their day, the worry would be New World is not going to have as much upside capture. So if you really want a pure play, whereas JP Morgan is a pure play, go one more slide down if you would. So the upside capture on JP Morgan is amazing, gives you 123% of the up, but it's giving you 110% of the down because the category is stalling. Whereas our other fund, American Funds, gives you 110% of the upside, which is not too bad, but it plays defense much better, which is why it's a net better performance. So do we want to keep that pure play? Unfortunately, the pure play is below benchmark or beyond our capacity to keep it. Vanguard is the one there, so they give you about a, down there. Yeah, Vanguard gives you about 100% or 99% of the upside, maybe 97% of the downside. But we've got a fund that's bottom quartile on 2 year and 3 year, year to date, and it's the third quartile on 4 years. So I just think you can't keep it.
Scott, how do you feel conceptually about an index fund in this category?
Yeah, that's a lovely question because normally in this category, you want an active manager because you've got 30 different countries and thousands of different stocks. So you want a manager out there finding the next big name. In the S&P, everyone knows the name, but in the emerging markets, that would be my hesitation about adding Vanguard. I'd really love to have an active manager. I don't know if that was your thought process too, but I definitely think that that would worry me a little bit, but Vanguard's kind of the best of the rest.
So this is not currently red flagged, is it?
It is, but more than a year. So
we've
kind of pushed our luck here.
Time to make a move, maybe.
We have to, yeah. It's shown no signs of life.
Hey, Scott, if we pick the BlackRock, look at the three-year chart, are we sort of automatically behind the eight ball in terms of where it is? Are we already? Is it already in
there? Yeah, we have to pick it in red flag.
Yeah, that just seems.
It does have some good 5-year numbers.
Yes. And looking at the options on the table, it would. I know it's not our typical policy to have both 401A and 457 have the same fund, but that option does seem to be superior.
Yeah.
Or I think we're kind of looking at an index type fund. But kind of
force recommend a little bit to make a decision of those two. Yeah, you make a good point, Kevin. So Jason's point, so BlackRock's manager's been on the fund for 6 years and they beat 72% of their peers. So It's just the last 1 year and 3 years are very middle of the time.
Well, you mentioned that some of these funds invest in Russia.
There was a stock exchange there.
Yes. Okay. The federal government probably prohibits a lot of those.
That's true now, but yeah, it's, and I mean to keep track of whether this has changed, but they literally shut down the exchange. So if you own any Russian stocks, you can't sell them. There is no place to sell them. So
it's like my Bitcoin.
So they're still selling oil over there, but you can't sell your stock from the oil company. And you couldn't say, we're going to go on the London Stock Exchange, because as you're alluding to, all the Western countries would be like, oh no, you're not coming here until you stop what you're doing. But Russia is an emerging markets area. It's just down 100%.
Well, what do you guys want to move to?
The tough one.
How many other funds do we hold in both plants? Other than, like, I know the 500 index is in both, but other than that.
Oh, where we have both?
Yeah.
T. Rowe Price, All Cap Opportunities, Vanguard 500, the Guaranteed, of course.
It's I mean,
please look here. Thank you for that question. It's all index. No, she's right. If you include the index funds, it is. But active management, it's only T. Rowe Price All Cap, but they've been so good. Tough not to run twice.
Which is, yeah. Clearly been the best performer in this category, right? Seems like we might be sacrificing performance to get diversity.
So you could have New World in both plans, and then if emerging markets start showing signs of life, you could look at more funds to capture the upside for the 4-7. But maybe is our job to pick what's best now that was only for that fund. And the low expense 25-year manager team. Doing it in the right way. Only Microsoft was really smart.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to see it so small. I apologize. I am with you guys here.
It was a little small on the screen, sorry.
No, it's not your fault. I'm on my phone.
I'd like to make a motion to switch to the American Funds New World R6.
Also, okay, we have a motion, a second, to go into the American Funds New World R6.
Here, everybody.
So that's the action on the table. So then we can move on to the next one.
Guys, good work down to the end of the table. All right, so 457, we have a red flag from January on Touchstone Midcap Y. We're showing you there's another fund in the category. It's in orange, maybe for you, it's in red, but it's orange. It just tells me that's in both plans. So when you pointed a minute ago, we do have some funds of both plans that are index funds. So Touchstone, you'll notice on the 5-year chart, which is the square, it's outperforming less risk very comfortably. It's the 3-year that's got it red flagged. But take a look at the calendar years. Who's the big hero in 2023? It's the Touchstone. So that's a good sign. Let's look at 6 and 12 month numbers on the next page. And you can see they're clobbering everybody. So this is why we red flag them rather than just yank them out. They are coming roaring back. It's a 5-star rated fund. It's in the top 5% versus all its peers in the last 12 months. It's in the top 10% on the 5 and 10 year. It's really 2021 and 2022 that was hurting it. I think we can let bygones be bygones. The question is, do we have to pull it off red flag or pull it out of the plan by January? So do we keep it red flag today, or do we take it off red flag based on that 3-year number still being below benchmark? It does have tremendous momentum at the moment. So this is a case where moving these slides forward, because these are October numbers, adding November, adding December should be a positive for them and taking away other years. But I wouldn't replace it, even though we've offered you alternatives.
They earned it. Yeah, I'll move it if we remove the red flag.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to remove the red flag on them. They've recovered.
All right, so that is the 457 items for review. We're now looking at the 401 money purchase items for review. So we have two choices in here. Another fund in orange is reminding us that Janice Henderson Enterprises in both plans. So Janice Henderson is a good controller of risk. So when things were bad last year, they lost a lot less. Whereas J.P. Morgan had a tougher spell last year. But when things are good, J.P. Morgan is your hero, where they make a lot of money when things are good, but they're going to lose some of it back when things are rough. If you would notice the styles, though, which we don't talk about as much, the right where J.P. Morgan is, the blue circle, is the mid-growth benchmark. But if you look at S&P's benchmark, it's more towards the middle category there, which is more of a blend. S&P and Russell have two different strategies about how they create benchmarks. S&P, you have to be a profitable company being their benchmark, whereas Russell doesn't care. It's how big you are. So especially when we had those meme stocks being a big deal during COVID, a lot of the companies that didn't make money, like AMC movie theaters and GameStop, were the big winners, but they didn't make any money. They're still not making any money. And of course, our stocks have reflected that since then. But J.P. Morgan is a pure mid-growth fund. The benchmark itself is a little bit more of a blend benchmark, which is sort of interesting. Now, even more blend than that, or even more value than that, is the Janice Henderson. So while Morningstar still considers them mid-growth, you could argue they're maybe mid-blend or large value in terms of their approach. Now, as things have gotten better this year, year-to-date, notice J.P. Morgan does have a little bit better gain than the benchmark, and definitely a better gain than Janus, but Janus is still benefiting from not losing as much money last year. So Janus is not in question. We're just pointing out its differences. J.P. Morgan, as we put in that little box, if you can read it top in the white, it is still a five-star rated fund and bronze, and they're in the top 28% the last 12 months. They're middle of the pack the last 3 years, but they're top 10 or the ninth percentile in the 5 and 10 year. So the manager's done a good job, and they've been there 19 years on the fund. So let's look at recent performance on page 72. You can see that actually J.P. Morgan is the better performer of the two now that growth is back in fashion. I can't wait to run these numbers when we get November, because growth was all the rage again in November. So I'm sure J.P. Morgan did pretty well during that month. So if you had a question on the 6 month, it's actually Janus, because Janus doesn't capture the upside, it protects the downside. So we have these other alternatives to consider, but I'm going to make an important point here, is all the true mid-growth funds are all sitting down there with J.P. Morgan. And these aren't made up, you know, no-name funds, T. Rowe Price, MFS, ClearBridge, Delaware Ivy, so they are legit funds. They're just all kind of similar in the situation. So this was red flagged in April. I would suggest it stays on red flag, or that would be my recommendation to the committee.
I'm looking at the here, there's the yellow diamond. Is this kind of a case of where there's two different benchmarks and we're seeing one fund perform well against one benchmark and one fund perform adequate against another?
Yeah, so if you had it up against the Russell benchmark, the yellow diamond, it still is underperforming, but only slightly, and it's clobbering it on the five-year, clobbering both benchmarks on the five-year. But that was one of our decisions a few years ago, is do we want to use indexes that you have to be profitable to be part of, or you just have to be big to be part of? So we consciously made that choice, which is, this is the kind of environment where that works against us, but in the longer run, it all kind of comes out in the wash. You make a very good point. So it's like the index and all the funds that track that index, they're not index funds, but they buy those stocks from that index, are all kind of performing the same. If you kind of really venture off into value, which is the hashtag and our Janus fund, which you can see style-wise, they're more mid-blend, then you're the one that looks good on the three-year, but you don't look as good on the recent, you know, the big up years, you kind of miss out.
Yeah, Scott, I'm inclined to take your recommendation. I'd like to see the three-year chart improve hopefully based on recent performance. We have some more time, and then hopefully we can take out a red flag in the spring. But I would move that we maintain the red flag.
I agree with that.
Okay. That's the action on the table. Let's move on to the next one.
Was there a second?
You
point of order. Point of order. Okay, so more than a year on red flag is Goldman Sachs inflation protected securities. What's an inflation protected securities? It's a federal government bond that adjusts the interest rate twice a year based on the CPI. And while we've been in an inflationary environment, you think, hey, that's a wonderful time to be in inflation protected bonds. They tend to be 15 to 25 years in terms of maturity, and which bonds get hit hardest when interest rates rise, the longer term bonds. So you can see 2022, just a going through the floor year, down 12% in the fund. Now, if you hold all these bonds to the maturity, you're fine. If you have to sell those bonds on short notice, like Silicon Valley Bank or First Republic Bank or Signature Bank, then you go out of business. So the issue here, though, is our fund is underperforming the benchmark. Please note the scale, which is very compressed on these charts, but still underperforming nonetheless by one percentage point. This is a three-star fund, and the rare rating of negative as far as the team, Morningstar thinks that their management team is not resourced enough, doesn't have a strong enough bench. So our fund was good in 2019 and 2020. It's been a struggle ever since. Now, I'd love to show you a shiny
team down in place.
What is our time for this year? 3.6 years. So shorter than we've had it in the plan. Yeah. Sort of secondary or tertiary category where people don't focus as much because they don't even do credit evaluations. They just play the yield curve and guess where interest rates are going as far as what they buy. So we have some alternatives to consider. Your eye may go to those ones on the upper left. Those are shorter duration versions. So when interest rates fall, short duration bonds are not impacted as much because they're about to mature. You can just hold it to maturity. So American Century has an active managed version and Vanguard has a short-term version. Now, what happens when interest rates fall? Well, you want to be in the other category. You want to be in the longer-term ones because they perform better as interest rates fall. So we have our three stars in negative. I'll skip the short ones. Now, Loma Sales Inflation Protected is three stars in neutral. PIMCO Real Return is four stars in silver. T. Rowe 3 in bronze. Vanguard Inflation Protected is 4 in silver. And their short term is 5 in gold, but again, short term. Now, from a performance standpoint, I'd probably tell you that PIMCO is the best of the batch, but that expense ratio is a bit high, 0.67. It seems to me that inflation-protected securities have gone the way of the index fund and that Vanguard inflation-protected might be our best choice, four stars in silver. Now, none of them are above the benchmark, but you can see that at least they have company in the percentages of return that gives you there. That expense ratio is 10 basis points. There's not much money in here, everybody. It's 0.33%. Oh, he's saying he was on regular bond fund?
Yes, yeah, so we have a black block. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Needs to remind us that the 457 plan has a BlackRock inflation protected. So there is $450,000. But we're past 12 months without any signs of increased performance. So I think we've got to go to one of these alternatives.
Like you said, there's, given the way the category operates, there's an index fund might be appropriate for this compared to.
I think so. Yeah, I might have told you something different 2 years ago, anticipating interest rates going higher, that the active managers will play defense better, and that did hold true with traditional funds, but the inflation perspective, it didn't seem to matter. To like our Bond Fund of America and our JP Morgan Total Return, which are traditional funds with both, they're actively managed with both corporate and treasury securities, definitely did better than the index funds did, but it didn't seem to help here. So I think you just take the low cost and call it a day. It is 4 stars in silver, so it's not, but it's not outperforming anybody.
Do
we
have an opinion?
So the other suggestion would be you just merge into one of your other two bonds, but you have a bond index fund, you can merge it. You do have an active manager.
I'd like to make a motion to merge it.
There you go. I'm going to second that motion.
Thank you.
So
which funds? Which stuff?
Well, I would either, so this is 401A, so American Funds Bond Fund of America is the active manager, and the index fund is Fidelity U.S. Bond. You should active stay active, or should index, we go to index just because it's lower cost.
Question is the active.
One last fund to worry about. Okay, so it sounds like we have a motion to move it into the Bond Fund of America.
Yes. That's correct.
Thank you.
If anybody else here has an opinion, please pipe up. Your money too.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our items for attention. Were there any questions about funds on the items for consent?
That's for our January.
Sure. Depends on what lunch we're serving.
Depends on whether Dennis is cheering them.
Yeah, just,
there you go.
So,
read back our.
Yeah. You want to read back the recommendations?
So, we have. Gray flagging, Franklin Gold, Precious Metals, JP Morgan Emerging Market is getting switched to American Fund New World R6. We are removing the red flag on the Touchstone Mid Cap Y, keeping the red flag on the JP Morgan Mid Cap Growth R5, and merging into bond fund.
Merging Goldman Sachs. Protected in the Bond Fund of America.
Bond Fund of America.
So, Jason, that's your motion?
Yes.
Our second?
Yes.
Okay. We have a motion, a second on the floor. Will you call the roll, please?
Roll call, Director Mesqua?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Jason Dadakis?
Yes.
Kevin O'Toole?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Motion carries 5-0.
Great. Okay, these will all be placed on the consent calendar at the December 20th board meeting for those of you that will be here. And are there any announcements or reports? Anyone? Seeing none, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Hey.
Thank you, John.
Good job. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Better otherwise.
You should jump, yeah.
Yeah.
Jump up and get sure.
Pizza. Yeah.
There we go. Warming was ahead of you.
You do.